raise my voice against Check. The violence.
Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope. Yo, man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY. Tune in for our first show of the week. Make sure you catch us Monday through Friday. We just started doing 5 days a week a few weeks ago, and it seems to be going pretty well. So if you happen to tune in last Thursday, we had a guest on by the name of Derek Bros from Houston. And he talked about this event that we're helping to put together, which is going to be on January 31st. So I just want to encourage everybody to look for that, which is going to be a national event against torture, because especially considering this recent CIA report, which was completely watered down. I mean, we're starting to see a lot of the horrendous stuff that goes on overseas and possibly here at home, and we know at Guantanamo for sure. But, you know, another thing to think about is that one of the supposed attackers in the French terror attack was saying what part of what inspired him to go into, you know, become radicalized was after what happened at Abu Ghraib, which was that horrible situation in Iraq, where the troops were abusing a lot of the detainees and stuff like that. So yeah, make sure you check that out if you guys want to go back and listen to Thursday's show. You can go on the archives, or you can go find us on YouTube at UCY to listen to that. I'm also joined here by my co-host, DB Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man? Hey, DB, you there? All right, he may be having some connection difficulties over there. Not really sure. I'm sure he'll come on the call sooner or later.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you now. How's it going, man?
I'm doing good. Just watching some of the news going on now, and 10,000 troops storming into Paris, and I don't know what the hell is going on, man. It just looks like some crazy bait and switch just took place, or some kind of coup d'etat almost got. You know, how did 40 world leaders all kind of get together in one place and nothing happened to any of them? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, man, and the whole thing is a total farce. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but, I mean, it's just totally hypocritical for these people to be. I mean, Netanyahu was out there. I mean, this guy's a war criminal. What in the hell is he doing out there protesting against violence? It's absolute hypocrisy.
Yeah, it's just a slap in the face, really. It kind of shows who's running things still. I don't know how much longer they're going to be running things kind of being so brazen, like they have been. But, you know, it looks to me like with what's going on with ISIS now and how we're really coming down on them and hammering them, and we're actually working in concert with Turkey and with Iran, all going into Syria and actually kind of inadvertently propping up, the regime there already, you can start to see that there's like this definite rift and sides are being taken of some sort for something that's getting ready to play out, and France is just getting drawn into it. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if something were to happen. You know, they try to get something sparked in Germany with the whole anti-Muslim, you know, whatever protests, which, you know, it was such a tiny minority of society. It was basically like the skinheads would be here. And they're just not getting any traction going with trying to create dissent in Europe. And, you know, they've been saying forever, oh, the Muslims are going to take over. They're going to destroy the culture. And, you know, that's the first generation. The second generation, they assimilate. It's like that for every immigrant group. So, you know, it's just silly and it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's a lot of fear-mongering going on in Europe right now. It's hard to think of French people being racist, but there definitely is a rising tide of racism, anti-immigrant sentiments, and very nationalistic, undercurrents that are rising up in Europe all over the place. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, because if you think about it, Europe is where fascism comes from. You know, fascism was first explored by in Spain with the help of a lot of these Nazi sympathizers, and then Mussolini, and then Hitler. But I mean, this is where fascism comes from. So we got to really be careful when we start seeing these fascist ideologies starting to rise in places like France and Spain, Germany, England, very much so as well. And then, of course, here in the U.S. too. I mean, there's a bunch of people that are Islamophobic. There's a bunch of people that are anti-immigrant and racist. So this is a scary thing. But here's the trend I'm kind of starting to see, is that there definitely is this trend, but I think a lot of it is like older people that are trending in these old, you know, fascistic ideas. And I think younger people are kind of more or less drifting away from those ideas. So to me, it's kind of a win-lose scenario. But the thing that we always talk about and thing to keep in mind is that it's the young people that are always the ones that are fighting the battle, or, you know, doing whatever it is that needs to be done. So as long as the youth aren't entrapped by these horrible ideas, then I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, I don't think they are trapped by it. I think they're looking for any way out that can happen organically, and kind of moving away from this, you know, centralized power conglomeration. And it's allowed people to be above the law and kind of do whatever they want and have this wealth that really is kind of fake. I mean, it's all derivative-based, so it really doesn't have any value. The only real value to it is people still believing in the system and going to work in the morning, and guys with guns enforcing laws that guys with a lot of money have, and the money's just all fake anyway. So we're kind of stuck in this loop. You know, we're stuck in a Mobius loop. We're never going to get out of it until we actually evolve in our way of thinking. And it's going to take some really fundamental changes. Like, I know we always talk about things, you know, being groundbreaking as far as pulling away, but for just in the interim, in the meantime, people may need to come to grips with actually having lower income, lower purchasing power, because the parity isn't there throughout the world, and it's causing a lot of strife, and it's causing a potential world war brewing. And if people want to stave off that, we may need to lower our, you know, standards or quality of life, so to speak, not use so much energy and waste so many materials, and get back to a simpler time for a while, you know, until technology open sources completely and we have unlimited energy. And that's the whole goal.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely ways to push back, you know, and if these older people are getting entrapped by this, you know, the same old mainstream media that I'm sure they have in France and they have it in England. We saw that during the Scottish independence vote. All the corporate media turned on the independence idea and like totally made it seem like a bad idea, and that's why it lost. Because it's a lot of it is old people voting and stuff like that, but they did have like an 85% turnout. So the media is still really strong. So these ideas could be, you know, hammered in to the culture. But, you know, if you look at the trends, it seems like most trends start with younger people and then head upward. They don't start where it's a bunch of old people have these ideas and then all of a sudden everybody wants to adopt these ideas, because that's normally not how it works. You know, so that's the whole thing where I'm kind of I'm kind of like optimistic about. But back to these 10,000 troops that are being mobilized in France, and then we also saw there was a few articles came out about how they're also mobilizing military police in England. And when I was in Mexico, I was talking to this British guy, and he was telling me that like 95% of the cops in England aren't even armed with guns. They're all basically non-lethal. And so, like, you know, we've talked about this before on the show about you know, transitioning the cops away from lethal force to non-lethal force. And a lot of people are like, oh no, that would never work. Cops need their guns and stuff. Well, guess what? It's working in England. And in many other places around Europe, the cops don't have guns per se. They may have those taser guns and billy clubs and stuff like that. They can still do some damage, but they kill a lot less people in basically every other country in the world than they do here in the U.S. You know, and I guess it's not a huge surprise looking at the war on drugs, looking at the size of our prison population and the amount of policing that goes on. I get the phrase that I've been seeing going around lately is the broken window policing, where they're basically just getting people on the most minor shit possible all the time in New York City. At least they were. But this is kind of a scary move, because it's not just the French or the British that are putting in military police, but you also have members of Congress and the newly anointed Republican Congress that just, you know, came to fruition. These guys are already
what they're passing already. I mean, they're gonna repeal abortion rights. What are they gonna try to overturn Roe versus Wade? And if they take it back to a state level, maybe I can understand the logic behind that, to let each state make its own decision, but really boil it down to make it each county. So if somebody in one town, you know, still needs to get it done for whatever reason, they can drive and go get it done or whatever. But, you know, I don't understand where it'll stop. I mean, the thing is, the Republicans are going to grab everything for private sector. And while that's good in the short term, in the long term, we still have the problem with too much workforce, not enough jobs, and not free education, and not even free healthcare. So, it's in these loops. Either way, we're damned. Like, we're damned big government, damned big business. We got to get away from both, and now, like, get to something else.
Well, you know, what's happening is, considering what's gone on in France, these guys in the GOP are saying, hey, we need more NSA surveillance. We need to make it bigger, not make it smaller. You know what I mean? They're basically using like Orwellian type of reasoning, and they're basically saying, yeah, everybody hates the NSA, but how about we give you a little more of it? And you know, but we gotta keep in mind, this could potentially turn into a French 9/11. Right. This could be the point where they say, okay, well, we're going to have to basically give you the French version of the Patriot Act. Now, don't get me wrong. The NSA already has so much access to French communications, and they share with France what they choose to. But, you know, this may be a point in Europe where they really start upping their national security state, man. And this could be a very scary prospect. And I mean, I don't know. I think there's big geopolitical implications.
It's coming down to, like, pretty much for Europe, especially Germany, because of their economic power. They've had the U.S. to basically back them militarily, you know, since the Berlin fell in 45, and they haven't had to worry about building anything up, especially nothing to project power. So now that they're in this position where Russia's like, hey, you know, if you're going to bolster NATO and make us uncomfortable and everything like that, we'll just cut gas supplies to you. They can't get they just can't get enough for the winter, and they could cut it off like now. They can cut it off at any time, and then NATO would basically get disbanded. So it's all a big house of cards right now. Something major is bound to happen, but it's kind of like who has the most staying power, the ruble, the yuan, the dollar. Who knows? Who's willing to do the most crazy thing to keep it propped up? Probably us.
Yeah, man. I you know, we are already basically propping up NATO and in a large part the UN. In my opinion, from like recent developments that I've seen, the UN is much more of a like it's a huge like corporatist entity, but at the same time, at least it's representative of the members of it more or less. You know, Russia has like a veto vote, and China has a veto power. You know, it's actually representative of these major powers. But NATO isn't really. NATO is more or less just a Western imperialist type of entity. And it's basically the new, what was that old company, the Dutch trading company or whatever it's called?
The East Indian Company, which it sort of is in a way. It protects that kind of stratosphere of economic influence. But yeah, it's just the winds of change, man, because like Nixon kind of signed the death warrant when he went off gold completely, and then they drained Fort Knox out, and who the hell knows where any of it is anymore. Probably it's all in Switzerland. But, you know, China's been owed this debt for a long time, and it continues to, exponentially increase, so much so that they're just buying up all our real estate. What are they going to do with it? I have no idea. I guess just the richest Chinese people are going to keep immigrating over, keep coming over. So do we have a soft kind of change and a cultural shift over a generation or two? Yeah, that'll happen. It's just wars are not what people think they are anymore. Like, you can't have a conventional war anymore. If we ever get to the point where we have one, it's a nuclear war eventually. And that's what we're trying to stop the whole time. Everything we do to get, you know, exposure to these crimes, these war crimes, these people that are basically playing with everybody's life on Earth right now, everything we can do to stop that, it adds another day to our lives for sure.
Yeah, and you know, these guys are out there in France last week marching against violence. You know, and these are all, most of these guys are like NATO people, and a few people have called out the hypocrisy, including Jeremy Scahill, which is the guy that's co-founder of The Intercept, which is the project that him and Glenn Greenwald are working on. But he got interviewed by Democracy Now. I just want to read one of the quotes. More than 40 world leaders traveled to Paris to help lead the march. What we saw on display on the one hand was very heartening to see so many people come into the streets. But on the other hand, this is a sort of circus of hypocrisy when it comes to all these world leaders who are marching at the front of it. Every single one of those heads of state or representatives of governments there wage their own wars against journalists. So, I mean, it was like a one-hour interview. I didn't watch the whole thing, but basically what he was saying is that like all these guys that were out there marching in the streets of France, I mean, I mentioned Netanyahu earlier, but you got the Prime Minister of Spain, you got the Foreign Minister of Russia, Foreign Minister of Egypt, King Abdullah of Jordan, the guy from Turkey, Israel, United Arab Emirates, I mean, all these countries. Secretary General of NATO as well. I mean, and all of these guys, every single guy that was there has made like all these, has had all these transgressions. You know, and so this is just a total, like, they basically just co-opted this whole terror attack and said, hey, look, we stand against all this bad stuff, even though we actually commit this same exact stuff. So to me, it's just such an Orwellian concept, and none of the corporate media has even scratched the surface on any of this stuff. All they're reporting is that, oh, look how cool this is, and then you know what the biggest topic is? Oh, well, how come Obama didn't show up? You know what I'm saying? That has become the biggest trending topic. Why hasn't Obama or Holder, how come none of them showed up?
Because he can't, because they're not welcome. I mean, that's just probably the long and short of it, to be honest. I don't think there's any other reason for it. I mean, can you? it's got to be that there's some kind of political shift or dynamic going on that we don't see behind the scenes. Who wasn't there is probably more telling than who was there, to be honest.
Yeah, man, and I mean, it's at the same time, it's all just a show, right? It's all just this PR stunt, more or less. And the media has morphed the entire conversation into that. Is where was Obama? Why wasn't Obama there? And now the latest headline, Obama apologizes for not sending anybody to the march. I mean, this is like, this is, no one's even talking about why this terrorist attack happened. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's talking about the racism that's going on against Muslims in Europe. All they want to talk about is if Obama showed up or not. I mean, this is the materialistic corporate media, and this is what they're feeding people, primetime news. So, I mean, this is just, to me, it's just a slap in the face. It makes me question everything. And I mean, there's probably almost everything that we've been fed is probably either twisted, manipulated, or an outright, you know, false. You know, so all of this stuff needs to be double checked, fact checked. I think we need to get better at people need to get better at verifying information through like crowdsourcing and stuff. There's this really cool app that we were working with for a while. They've been running into some funding issues as far as building the app for Android platform, because they only built it for Apple's. That's all they could afford to do. But it was called Views. It was called an app called Views, V-E-W-S, and it was like Twitter, but it was geolocated, and you had to have a picture to post. And it was really cool because you could actually source it to the exact location of where the news is happening. But this is the kind of stuff, the kind of technology that we need to start working with, so that we could, you know, verify what's being said. Because right now, I mean, this crap that's being thrown out there, this whole, oh, was Obama there, or did the U.S. send anybody to the, this is complete theater. I mean, they're not even mourning the people that were killed in the terror attack. They're just saying like, oh, look at all these politicians, and you know, here are the politics of it, and we're gonna go
solidarity against what though? I mean, do they imagine what they're actually saying? I mean, they're basically calling for a cultural divide, and it's insane to me, because they're going to hammer down on, you know, of course they're going to hammer down on the Muslim population in France. That I can't not see that happening.
Yeah, and it's going all over Europe. We do have a caller on the line, 818. How's it going? I think we have Manny on the line. How you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, Nick? BB Short, stuff like that. Manny Aguilar down here live in City Heights. We had this big thing happening today on the basically, you know, thing about Victor Ortega, the young man that got killed by police in San Diego and stuff. So we did a big march and stuff like that. We got in trouble big time, but and Kathy got a warning, but oh well, what else is new, you know? Is we went into the super, there's a story, Mexican story here. We went in, and the security guy said, you can't come in. We just rushed in. I mean, what's he going to do, stop, you know, 50 people? It's like one guy, you know, so we rushed in. So we weren't going to go throughout the whole store. We just basically went out to the door. The only thing is, because the door was closed, so we had to loop around. Next thing you know, you have all these cops coming. The women are the ones that were ready with the batons. I said, oh, my God, that's coming hard. And I'm in the front. I'm like, oh, great, that's all I need and stuff. So, you know, that's what basically happened. Saturday, I was down at the border, you know, down in San Ysidro, down there for, you know, the 43, stuff like that. We met a group down there that basically was doing a protest also because of that young man that got killed by, you know, immigration down there as he's crossing the border. And stuff like that, and of course, you know, the march that was happening in Tijuana, and our march happening down here for the 43 students of UC Napa in the state of Guerrero, stuff like that. So that's my update and stuff like that. So I've been visiting you guys down here in San Diego County in the real world, making it happen. You know that, you know. So
you gotta,
never fear, Manny's here.
You should stop by the office sometime this week so we can hang out a little bit. Manny, what do you think about what's going on with the NYPD and how they basically they've cut way back on their policing, and the whole broken window idea of policing all these petty crimes, like they did with Eric Garner, where he was, you know, only accused of selling loose cigarettes, and like apparently that's an arrestable offense in New York when it comes to regular policy. But ever since that guy took out the two cops, and there's been this rift in the NYPD, the cops have cut back massively on their policing of petty crimes. So basically, traffic tickets are down like over 80%. You know, minor offenses are down big time. Drug offenses are down big time. What do you think of that? I mean, I'm kind of like, you know, I know the NYPD is like a huge problem and it's a huge gang. But at the same time, I kind of think like maybe them cutting back on their policing is a good thing. Because what it's done is not only has it gave a lot less people tickets for petty crimes, but it's also shown that if the cops cut back on all that crime, then there's not going to be some crazy crime wave and a bunch of people aren't going to get murdered, and there's not going to be like roving gangs in the streets robbing people. Because that I think is the effect that the NYPD was trying to create. They're trying to scare people into saying, oh, yeah, we do need the NYPD. Look what happens if we don't have them. But that's not what happened. I mean,
the city goes broke.
Yeah, it seems like it backfired. What do you think of that, Manny?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because I've been analyzing that for a few days, and of course, I haven't been able to listen to your show. Last week, I was on the run all over the place. But basically, what I was thinking that I wouldn't pass the NYPD saying that there was more crime than there was, so they can hire more cops and stuff like that. So that's a good thing. It just tells us that, you know, most of the crime that was basically petty stuff, like maybe somebody had, say, an ounce of marijuana or less, something like that, you know, and it just, so it kind of really told us that we don't need that many police officers and stuff like that. Another thing I like to make a comment about New York is this, is when they boycotted the mayor of New York and stuff like that, that was disrespectful, obviously, but I think more than anything, is disrespectful is one thing and racism is another story. I think he got a little disrespected on racism too, and it's not just because of him, because he's a vanilla brother. It's his family happens to be dark chocolate sister, and of course the kids and stuff like that. But it's kind of sad. It's kind of sad because if it wasn't that his family was black, I think they wouldn't have done that to him and stuff like that. So it's kind of sad because if they do it to him, then they'll do it to us, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's a crazy dynamic. I really don't know where I stand on it personally. I do think that it's a positive development that the NYPD is cutting back on all that stuff. Now, here's the latest news, and this you'll see on the anti-media along with most of these other stories that we've talked about tonight. Is that now the upper brass, quote unquote, of the NYPD are basically more or less going to force these cops to start doing all of this stuff that they've cut back on, which is the minor solo patrolling, ticketing people over minor stuff, parking tickets, minor drug offenses and stuff like that. Basically, they're only coming out for robbery like a live robbery and major crimes and stuff like that. When they get a 911 call, they'll come out. But they're not out there just looking to arrest people or tag people with tickets or shake people down, like stop and frisk and none of that stuff. You know, they're not doing that right now. But what's going on is the upper brass are saying, hey, dude, you guys got to start doing that again. Otherwise, you're not going to get any time off. You're not going to get lunch breaks. I mean, you're not going to get – you're basically going to get screwed over unless you start arresting people and handing out tickets. And this is the message that is being sent by the NYPD bureaucracy right now. And so, I mean, this is – I guess what we're starting to see is probably a numbers crunch, right? You talked about the – someone mentioned the budget and the money that comes in. I think that they're starting to see, oh, damn, we're losing millions of dollars by these guys not doing their policing. And so, I mean, honestly, what I think is that the police union is looking for some kind of concessions to probably increase their powers or do something like that because of the two guys that got killed by that guy that went off the deep end and went on a killing, a rampage and killed those two cops in New York. So either that or these guys are actually genuinely scared. I don't know. You know, that's the thing. Is like, I don't know where to stand on it because I don't know what's really going on. I don't know if the NYPD is actually scared that these two guys got shot or if they're just acting like that in order to get concessions from the city. I don't know. But I guess that's what we're going to find out. But in the short term, I think that this has been a good thing because it shows that all of this major, you know, over-enforcement of minor laws is not needed. We don't need 35,000 cops on the streets of New York. I mean, that's just completely excessive. And I think that that's what this is showing. The only reason to need that many cops is that if you're scared of some kind of civil uprising. And I mean,
LA has only like 11,000 too, and LA's only got about 5 million people less. So yeah, NYPD's got at least 10,000 extra guys that they really just used probably for sheer numbers.
Right on, DV. So that's like, I want to ask you a question is, what DV and Nick, what is it though, if police departments are saying that they're really trying to be transparent and honest, blah, 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 why do they get rid of a cop that blows a whistle, you know, an honest cop blows a whistle on corrupt cops and stuff like that, just like that lady that's trying to get her pension because she blew the whistle and said that her partner was choking this, person, you know, what's up with that?
And then also the research shows that the two cops that were assassinated in their own squad car were two of the good guys. They had actually been commended for community service and that kind of stuff. They were family men. So were these two of the good guys and this was sending a message too?
Wow. It's just amazing. So like, it just blows me away sometimes. An honest cop gets treated really bad in his own department and stuff like that, you know. Hey, Nick, just to give you a heads up, dude, there's an open seat in the city council Chula Vista, okay?
Oh, nice. Well, we'll have to find someone to run for it because it's not going to be me at this time.
okay.
Let's, Parks and Rec, Nick. Parks and Rec.
I'm good on that, man. But, you know, to me, I guess, you know, one of the things that's also interesting about these cops and the situation that's going on about the good whistleblowers, you know, the guys that actually stepped forward, and like that woman that recently was came to light that she had been fired for blowing the whistle. I mean, this is just part of that thin blue line that everyone's talked about, and it's completely true. And the most extreme case, you look back at what happened to Dorner. And that's kind of the same thing that happened to him, except he didn't go and try to, you know, sue to get his pension back. He picked up his gun and went shooting people, you know. And this is the thing. This is the problem. Is that like when you have this system that's so unjust and so large, and so many people are affected by it. Well, you're gonna have wingnuts going off the, you know, going off the deep end like Dorner, who, don't get me wrong, he was provoked. Because of what happened to him by the LAPD, but at the same time he went off the deep end and started killing people, and then you got this the guy that was killed the two NYPD cops. Same thing. I mean, he was just so, I mean, yeah, he had a troubled background and stuff like that, but he was just so tired of all this news about people getting killed by cops that he just went off the deep end and started shooting people.
And Baltimore PD knew about it. Remember, we had our guest on a few weeks back. And there's no collaboration. There's no information sharing between these agencies. They're all competing. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if people dug deep enough that a lot of these PDs are now private organizations, that they're not accountable, and they don't share information anymore.
There was a few SWAT teams. I think it was in Washington State. Basically, they were formed as a nonprofit corporations. And therefore, they were trying to get outside of Freedom of Information request, Freedom of Information Act request. So they were basically saying, "Hey, we don't have to make our documentation public because we're not public; we're a corporation." A lot of these quote unquote police departments, or what you would call police departments, it may be a SWAT headquarters or whatever. A lot of these are becoming, you know, more or less corporations. And they're stepping outside of the bounds of government, which, in a way, I mean, I guess it's the worst of both worlds, because not only are they still technically cops and stuff like that, but
too big to fail, but at the same time,
yeah, they're still protected as cops, but they're also protected as corporations. So I mean, it's a double edged sword that's horrible.
Yeah, very true. Let me give you the update on what's happening our way down there. Well, I'm down here right now, up there in L.A. A big story up there, you know, down my way, is the infiltration by the FBI into the LA County jails and stuff like that. Those deputies are going down the, you know, they're just prosecuting deputies left and right and stuff like that. And they're still coming down the FBI. You know, that cell phone, that the cop that put the cell phone in there, got charged with it and stuff like that, corruption, taking money, blah, 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 and stuff like that. And, you know, and of course they're blaming Baca and they're blaming the other guy. And, you know, I believe that the top rank had something to do with it. It's not just the lower rank. I really believe that the orders came from down there. And, of course, the prosecutors are saying the guy that gives the order is just as guilty as the guy that did it. So they need to go after the big guys and not just take, you know, let the little guy take the fall. I'm not saying that little guy shouldn't take the heat, but, you know, the big guy should take the bigger heat, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, so I mean, in an organizations the size of NYPD and LAPD, you know, of course there's bound to be some like lone wolf, just cops that are just swindling or, you know, jacking people for drugs or money or whatever. But then there's also bound to be some type of, you know, corrupt little cartel within the police departments that goes all the way to the top, man. I don't doubt that at all. I think the corruption definitely goes all the way to the top. In fact, a lot of times the corruption stems from the top. You know what I mean? You know, and if it's just one cop doing one little bribe, taking one little bribe, to me that's like, okay, whatever. That's not that big of a deal. I mean, if it's the chief of police saying, hey, you guys got to have quotas and you got to meet this many tickets a day, to me that's a way bigger deal. I mean, that's affecting a bunch of people, and one cop being corrupt, I mean, that's one thing. And that's bad too. But when the corruption goes up to the top, I mean, that affects way more people. When we're talking about, you know, the LAPD with over 10,000 police, I mean, dude, that's huge. You know, and then there was a report, I don't know, six months or maybe a little longer back, about how the cops in LA were also disabling their dash cams. I don't know if you remember that, but I mean, this was a conspiracy. I mean, all the cops in this one area disabled all of their dash cams. It wasn't just one guy being corrupt. It was the entire force. And if the entire force is doing it, obviously somebody higher up had knowledge of it.
Taking the antennas off the cars.
Yeah, so, I mean, this stuff needs to be, I mean, thoroughly investigated. And I think that's one of the problems is that, you know, a lot of the talk that goes on, a lot of the dialogue, a lot of the conversation is very like superficial, and it's like, oh yeah, the cops are bad and stuff. It's like, well, what about the whole idea? You know, the whole idea of cops is a pretty flawed idea. You know, and I think it's not about like one cop here, a cop there that are bad. I mean, the whole system is messed up. There's a bunch of good cops that are mixed in. They're stuck within the system, just like many people are stuck working jobs that they don't really like. And, you know, a lot of people that work in the government aren't exactly the happiest, you know, and supportive of the government, but that's their job and that's how they make a living. And so there's people in there that know that there's something ain't right, and there's people that are in there that are willing to blow the whistle. But the atmosphere is just so hostile, right? It's so hot. Look at Edward Snowden. You know, he was vilified completely by the media, completely by the government. They told a bunch of lies about him and lied about all the stuff that he was leaking and stuff. So the whistleblower, you know, environment is very hostile. You know, so that's one of the things that we really need to work at is creating an environment where it's safe for people to defect from the NYPD, defect from the LAPD, defect from the NSA, and they're not going to get prosecuted. I mean, look at Chelsea Manning is in prison for like 30 years. For blowing the whistle on a bunch of lies that were going on in Iraq and with the foreign policy and WikiLeaks. I mean, to this day, WikiLeaks is still releasing some of that information that Chelsea Manning leaked. You know, so but I mean, she's rotting in prison. You know, so we need to change the entire atmosphere for in order to make the likelihood of whistleblowers stepping forward higher. And then the more whistleblowers step forward, the more cops are willing to break ranks. The more people in the military are willing to say, yeah, you know what, something ain't right. You know, we shouldn't be doing this, or this isn't a just war, and they're willing to step forward. But at the current time, I mean, it's so frowned upon. Look at how the media treated Edward Snowden. Like you remember all those segments about, oh, is he a hero or is he a traitor? And they're all talking about how he's a traitor and stuff. I mean, it's all propaganda, man. And so they're trying to scare anybody that's thinking about blowing the whistle. They're trying to scare the shit out of them so that they don't do it. Exactly. We got to change that.
So, Yeah, there was a lot of heat that we put on the Mexican consulate up here in San Diego, and then up there in L.A. So I came down here last week, and it was really great because, you know, as you guys know, the president of Mexico is visiting the president of the United States on the 6th of January, which happens to be the day of the Three Kings. You know, a lot of people don't understand that our holidays go all the way to January 6th because it's the day of the Three Kings, and then we do the rosca, you know, and stuff like that. But the thing is that the president of Mexico was down there, and basically he would put a lot of heat, you know, basically, and basically we're telling Barack Obama to stop the money going into Mexico, stuff like that. Also made a comment, you know, people passing by right there downtown, they comment to them because people were wondering, they said, well, you're hitting us hard, blaming us for the cartels. Why are you blaming the United States? Well, no other reason than you're the number one customer. You know, not one of the number one, not the one of the, you know, but the number one. You're the biggest consumer, so like that, you know. And you're also the biggest polluter in the world, so you tell me why I'm putting heat on you guys. You know, you say this and you do another stuff and all that. So we want them to stop the Merida thing, stuff like that. You know, the government needs to get out, you know, basically get out of Mexico and let everybody do their own thing and stuff like that. But it's like, Nick, you said it before, and of course, TV also, you notice that it's like Mexico can't change because as soon as something's happening that the United States doesn't like, they'll infiltrate the place and stuff like that. So that's what makes it difficult. You guys are really right about that, too.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's an important point you bring up here because that's what I've been seeing a lot of, too, a lot of the media and a lot of the activists that are participating in this fight for the students, the 43 students that disappeared, and of course it's grown into a much bigger fight. It's grown into a huge democracy movement, and it's a reaction to the corrupt government that has taken over Mexico, and it's basically operated by two different cartels. One cartel is the drug cartels, and the other cartel is the U.S. government. And we send billions of dollars down to Mexico every year to fight this war on drugs. So in effect, you know, a lot of the weapons being used derive from the U.S. And obviously that's a huge problem, right? So if we're sending billions of dollars in military aid down to Mexico, and even knowing that they have a hugely corrupt government, that makes the U.S., you know, a aggressor more or less against the Mexican people, and that's a huge problem. And I think that's what's great about a lot of these protests is that they're actually getting down to the root of the problem by saying, "Hey, tell the U.S. to stop sending money and stop participating in the drug war in Mexico." You know, and you know, another big part of the problem, you touched on the fact that the U.S. is basically the biggest consumer of, you know, the drugs that are coming up. But also keep in mind that it's the American drug war that causes a lot of these cartels to be created in the first place. Now, think about, to make a comparison, think about coffee, right? Now, coffee, I mean, probably has a huge market share. I don't know if it's anywhere the size of illegal drug trade, but I'm sure it's at least pretty big compared to it. But you don't see 40,000 people getting killed every year over coffee, but you do see 40,000 people getting killed every year over cocaine. Now, the difference is, well, coffee is addictive, yes. People can't do anything without it, just like people that are addicted to cocaine or other drugs. It's a very similar product, but one is illegal and one isn't, right? And so what happens is once you make something illegal, well, then there's no choice but to force the cartel or the underground or the mafia, whatever you want to call it, is going to fill that void in the supply and demand chain. You know what I mean? So a huge reason, a huge source of the violence in Mexico, Guatemala, South America, Colombia, a lot of that violence is derived from the U.S. initiated drug war, and then, you know, of course, all of the global organizations we're a part of, like NATO, the UN, they're all against, you know, legalizing drugs, legalizing marijuana or cannabis, legalizing anything. They're all against that, you know. So all of our pressure is put against all these other countries, and Mexico is contemplated legalizing drugs many times, and they've gotten pretty serious about it. But every time they get serious about it, the U.S. comes in and either threatens to pull away all their foreign aid or threatens sanctions against them. So we are in effect kind of forcing Mexico to keep drugs illegal. And if Mexico was able to legalize drugs, I mean, a lot of the huge violence problems would start to go away. Now, there would still be underlying issues with all the corruption and bad government that's going on in Mexico, but you would be able to get rid of a lot of the violence if you're able to end the drug war. But as far as the U.S. stands, we're not going to let that happen. And I think that's a huge problem. We shouldn't be telling other countries how to dictate laws to their people, especially when these laws are unjust. I mean, everybody knows that the drug war is a total failure, and all it's done is create a huge prison population and a bunch of people that have become institutionalized. So why in the hell are we allowing our government to dictate that same policy to countries all around the world, including Mexico? And in a huge way, Mexico is the victim of all these policies. So, I mean, I don't understand why people have let this go on so long. I mean, fortunately here in California, we took a huge step against the drug war in the past election. And, you know, I'm very skeptical of elections and electoral democracy and Republican democracy and stuff like that. But I mean, when there is a victory, it must be acknowledged. I mean, California took a step against the drug war by voting for the proposition, which basically defelonized basically every petty drug possession charge. So basically, if you get caught with, as long as it's a personal amount, if you were to get caught in California with a personal amount of heroin or a personal amount of meth, you would not go to jail. They would write you up a ticket, and they would that'd be it. You wouldn't go to jail. It'd be a slap on the wrist. So I mean, that is a step in the right direction. Now, of course, if you get caught a few times, they're probably still gonna take you to jail or whatever. But you know, states are starting to realize it, and I think the population in general has basically realized the drug war was a failure, I mean, years and years ago. But it's only now with this legalization of recreational use of cannabis in Colorado, Washington, and stuff like that, that really the idea of ending the drug war legitimately is starting to finally come to the feasibility stage, right? And everybody, everybody thought Obama was going to be the guy that would finally end the drug war. Unfortunately, he's not. In fact, he's been more strict on drugs in many ways than George W. Bush. He's allowed more federal raids of marijuana dispensaries than Bush did. So, no, he hasn't been progressive when it comes to drug policy and stuff like that. But, I mean, I think the country, the mind state in general, is moving away from this drug war. So, I mean, if America can move away from it domestically, and of course we acknowledge that it's been a failure, hopefully they'll move away from it on foreign policy so they can stop enforcing the drug war in Mexico and stuff like that, because then we could get rid of a lot of the problems that are going on down there, and then maybe the people in Mexico have a better chance of actually having their voice heard. Otherwise, I think definitely what's going to go on in Mexico, and maybe Manny can give us an idea of how close it is, because I get the feeling that there's going to be a revolution in Mexico sometime pretty soon, because I just see the amount of people that are angry with their situation, you know, boiling over the top. But I mean, what do you think, man? I mean, how long is it going to be? Is it going to happen or what?
Well, I'll tell you what thing. That thing is going to escalate sometime this year, because they want this president so bad. I've never seen the country of Mexico ever wanting a president out that bad. I mean, people have talked about other presidents going out, but this one, they definitely went out, because what separates these killings from other killings is they know that the government did it. There's no doubt about it. Other times, nobody really knew who did it, you know, but this time there's no doubt about it and stuff like that. And they're also mad because the government has told these people, get over it. Let's start talking about other stuff. Oh, my God, that just really blew the people away. Get over it. Really? You know, it's all like that. So you're starting to hear that word, ya me cansé, you know, meaning I'm tired of corruption and stuff like that. But to belittle the people by saying getting over it, I mean, you don't tell people that, especially the mothers, you know what I mean? It's just, so that was a lot of disrespect and stuff like that, you know. And right now, the revolution is just because they believe that, the president is also, you know, protecting, you know, these people from Televisa, which happens to be the biggest network in the world, stuff like that. And, you know, and they call him the actor of Televisa because they don't believe he's genuine and stuff like that. And they're really mad that he's protecting his wife, you know, because they don't believe that his wife got that house, you know, the legal way. They think she got it with basically the taxpayer's money and stuff like that. So, and so they're so mad that it just, and the way I've been kind of, you know, keeping up with the news directly from reporters that I personally know and my sister in Acapulco, which is really great because I, you know, I'm from there. So I hear inside stories before they even come out and stuff like that. But I know they're getting serious, and because, I mean, how more serious can you get when in Mexico, for the first time, you close down two airports, major airports, Acapulco and Oaxaca. So people are basically talking about that they're not sure, but even the Zapatistas think it's going to be this year. So I believe them. And by the way, the Zapatistas have been very supportive with everybody and stuff like that, and I appreciate the love. The only thing that really bothers me sometimes, people ask me, they say, you know, Manny, why are the stations not covering Acapulco, the 43, in the English language more? They're covering, you know, it's great, they're covering Paris, but, you know, people get mad because they're killing the cow with Paris. They're just repeating themselves with all the Paris, but they don't even mention a little couple minutes of Acapulco, and it's kind of sad, you know?
Definitely, man. I mean, there's a big gap in morality there where, you know, it's like, okay, these, however many French, at first it was 10, I think it was like 16 or something, were killed in this terror attack over 2 days. And, and then it's, you know, it's world news and every single person knows about it. It's 24-hour news on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. You got 50 world leaders showing up to march with these people in France. And at the same time, you got these 43 students offed by the government of Mexico. Well, let's see why they're not covering it. Well, they're not covering it because the U.S. is funding that government, right? And the U.S. is helping to prop that government up. So it's okay. So then you start realizing, right, it's like, well, the media is not going to shed any negative light on the U.S. government, not in a realistic sense. Yeah, they're going to say, "Oh, Obama didn't show up to the protest to the march in France." Oh my God! Yeah, okay. Let's talk about some superficial garbage that doesn't actually mean anything. Well, they're not going to actually talk about that. The weapons that probably killed those 43 students were probably American-made weapons. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's a total hypocrisy in the media. And then we got these other two stories right here that blends right in with what you were bringing up here. And there's been a media blackout about this too. 50 dead civilians in an airstrike late last week in Syria. So I mean, the U.S. just blew up 50 people that weren't militants or weren't anybody that were fighting, you know. But at the same time, we blew up 50 people in Syria. But the news is covering 24 hours of the France attack. You know what I'm saying? And it's just rife, and it's just so rife with theatrics, you know. And that's what makes me just think that this whole thing is just, at the very least, it's become a media frenzy, more or less. And they're not even talking about, you know, like we mentioned at the beginning, they're not really talking about the reasons why people are becoming extreme. They're not talking about the racism going on in Europe.
And what's the distraction covering is what I want to know. What is it? What shroud's being put over what event and what's going on right now? I mean, there's something obviously very imminent about to take place. And what is it?
Yeah, I don't know, man. And then you got another, we got another story. We got another story about 2,000 people massacred basically by Boko Haram in Nigeria. And this is another story that's not really getting much play in the media. And I was doing a little research today on it. And it turns out the U.S. cut ties with Nigeria with oil back in June because of the fact that we have all this fracking and now, especially with the gas prices going down. We don't have to buy from Nigeria anymore. So now the media isn't going to propagandize Boko Haram anymore because we got nothing to gain. from propagandizing Boko Haram. So they're just going to go ahead and ignore these 2,000 people that were massacred in Nigeria because we no longer really have much of a natural resource interest in Nigeria. I mean, this is crazy. But this is what they do. But at the same time, they're going to take these 15, 16 people that are dead in France and just imprint it onto every single person's brain. I mean, this is just crazy stuff, and we got to call it how we see, you know, call it for what it is. I mean, this is it's propaganda.
Yeah.
Especially talking about calling it how it is, I have some breaking news. This is 314 Love Machines on Facebook and Twitter reporting once again. Breaking news, according to an article from A Magazine, from an article via Russia Today, via Anonymous Hispanics, I just found out right now that the Charlie Hebdo attack was a false flag operation, according to an ex-worker of the U.S. government.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it can definitely be speculated that it was. I don't want to say it was yet because I haven't seen enough evidence. But of course,
it doesn't have to be, though. They'll use it anyway. See, that's the that's the beauty of their insanity, is that as long as they get enough crazy people doing crazy stuff, they'll come up with the solution, and the solution's not going to be something we want.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of these things where whether it was an inside job or not, and it's just like 9/11. I mean, the whole thing, everybody wants to know if it's an inside job or not. Well, whether it was or not, it doesn't really matter because the Patriot Act still got passed. And we still invaded Iraq. We still invaded Afghanistan. We already went back into Iraq again. We're barely supposedly, quote-unquote, pulling out of Afghanistan, which we all know isn't completely true. So, you know, whether it was legit or not, these guys are going to politicize it. And I've already heard numerous reports about France is already getting ready to enact, you know, their new version of more or less a Patriot Act. And this is what these guys are going to do. And, you know, they just passed, you know, France already has a big spying dragnet, just like the U.S. has the NSA, right? And you got to remember the NSA revelations came out, it was just after the Boston bombings. But, I mean, knowing that we have this huge NSA and this huge dragnet of spy networks, and even the Russians tipped us off on the Boston bombing guys, we still weren't able to stop these guys. And France is pretty similar. They've got pretty similar laws already on the books where they already spy on their citizens and collect data and all that stuff. Well, and they already had looked at these guys as people of interest, and they still weren't able to stop it. I mean, how much more spying do they need? They can't stop shit, you know. And that's just how it is. If you're going to be, if you're going to be an imperialist, which France still is, despite many people.
Well, they're all under the empire. They're all under the Anglo-Saxon Empire, man. It stretches all the way to Germany, but now there's fractures in it, and that's what happens when you become oppressive to your own people. And you take away the whole reason why it was great to live here, which was the freedom to be either stupid or smart or rich or poor. Now they want us all poor and all stupid.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other things, too, is that...
according to the... President Obama, well, he wasn't at the Charlie Hebdo much, pretty much. He was saying a speech, and that apparently there was some massive hacking of U.S. military information, so it's probably going to be used as another excuse to pretty much either get another SOFA, CISPA, whatever they want to call it, or get the PPP fast-tracked as the best as possible.
Yeah, CENTCOM was also hacked today, which is also another crazy story. But yeah, these guys are just going to get they're more or less going to get their rights eroded, and they're going to cheer it on, you know, and it's very similar.
CENTCOM could only get hacked from within, too. If you think Sony had a firewall, imagine what just happened.
Yeah, and CENTCOM, it wasn't just their Twitter account. I think their YouTube account got hacked, too. I mean, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, there's just, these guys are trying to create this chaotic, you know, situation, and they're succeeding in many ways, but it's up to people to keep cool heads and kind of wade through all this stuff for what it really is, and we just need to outgrow what's going on, build new ways,
kill off their revenue like the NYPD is inadvertently doing. I mean, this is what we got to do, guys.
Have a good night, tomorrow. Guys.
Catch you 5 days a week. Thanks for calling in.
Bye, guys. Yo, here we go through the stereo.